Hello, and welcome to the Valley Voices Podcast, Season 5. I'm your host, Vanessa Cirillo from New England Public Radio. This is where we share stories originally told live on stage at our Valley Voices Story Slams at venues around Western Massachusetts. They're produced with our friends at the Academy of Music Theater. On this episode, you'll hear the winners of our first slam of the season. The theme was family ties. We were at Gateway City Arts in Holyoke, Massachusetts. Let's begin with Andrea Cohen-Kiner's story about growing up among the drag queens and strippers who populated her early life as the daughter of Big Al.
My dad was a 450-pound Jewish mafioso cross-dresser. The cross-dressing was strictly professional. And the story there is that when I was about four, growing up in Minneapolis, my dad bought a little corner bar down by the railroad tracks, just south of downtown Minneapolis. And he emblazoned his image on the outside wall of the establishment and opened the doors of Big Al's Bar. Now, just the night before, a club that catered to a male gay clientele had lost their license, and that group of men said, "Let's go down to Big Al's." And when my dad opened his bar that evening, he was full of an appreciative clientele that he served and worked with for the rest of his professional life. And in his role as the manager of Big Al's, he was also the MC. So I have vivid images of my dad in red sequins with a wig and a beard and as Bride of Frankenstein and many other costumes over the years. And business was really good. Eventually he sold Big Al's and he bought a larger place downtown, the Gay 90s. And the Gay 90s was actually two clubs. There was one side with a floor show and a restaurant and live music and strippers and, of course, female impersonators. And on the other side, under the same liquor license, was an intimate little gay bar. When you own this kind of a business in a metropolitan center, it isn't very long before you get an offer that you can't refuse. And my dad didn't refuse that offer. And within a short period of time, his income stream was supplemented by a brothel and a small fencing operation, which refers to selling stolen goods. That all came out of the front office. And when your family grows in this way, you get more aunts and uncles than you had before. My Aunt Renee was the hostess at the club at the Gay 90s, but she also fixed up the strippers with gentlemen to entertain. And my Uncle Cal, the floor man, was also the fence in charge of receiving and selling stolen goods. And my Uncle Lee was actually the MC of the floor show until he had his sex reassignment surgery and became my Auntie Lee. How was this for me as a kid? Well, it's your dad. These are his friends. This is where he works. This is how it is. What do I have really to compare it to? Except for the Hebrew school and the Sunday school and the Saturday school that they were sending me off to day after day after day, which they talked about completely different subjects than female impersonators, completely different. So it was confusing. It was also kind of cool, to be honest, to have power, to have money, to have every physical thing that I could want. Stolen merchandise, new appliances, drink and drugs, whatever was desired was available. But there was one moment I remember when I was about 16, I was sitting in my newly renovated bedroom, and I saw that the green shag carpeting and the car out front were paid for by girls on their backs. And I started paying attention to what I had heard in Hebrew school, and I heard about a value system that wasn't just about meeting all of your physical needs, that there was something else that might be also part of human nature and part of a purposeful, interesting, and meaningful life. And I moved in that direction. My dad was more comfortable when I was sleeping around than when I started dressing modestly. After all these years, I have to say that I learned a lot from my dad. I really did. And not all of it is something that I use every day in my work life, such as breaking into cars. But there are some things that I learned from my dad that I do use every day. And that, here's one of them. That the janitor is often the most indispensable and honorable person in a joint. And that whatever your place of work is, all the work that is important and necessary for that work to go on is part of your job, and none of it is beneath you. And that is a lesson that I learn every day in my current job as a rabbi, in my current joint, Temple Israel in Greenfield.
That was Andrea Cohen-Kiner with her story, Big Al's Bar. Andrea has been telling stories locally and back in Minneapolis for years. She describes herself as a preacher, a teacher, and a rabbi with a past. If hearing her story has you thinking about what you'd tell on the Valley Voices stage, visit our website, nepr.net/valleyvoices. You'll find all kinds of info on our series, including how to get tickets to our upcoming shows and how you can audition to share a story on our stage. Next up, cartoonist Hillary Price shares some bad dad jokes, courtesy of her own father.
It's this past June. I'm just home from the hospital after knee surgery. My parents have come to help out. I'm in a medicated sleep. Suddenly, ham, lamb, or steak? What? Dad leans in as if I'm hard of hearing. Do you like ham? At Christmas? Do you like lamb? I got it at a restaurant once. What about steak? Dad, why are you asking me about meat? Because if I need to cook you something, I want to know what to make. I enjoy my father most when there are witnesses. A guy I know once said, the solution to pollution is dilution. He was talking about hot tubs, but he cracked the code on family. Fast forward a couple months, I'm finally off crutches, and I asked my dad to go motorboating out on the Connecticut River. I also ask my friend Marin. She's my dilution solution. She's great with parents and had lost her own dad about 5 years ago. So the night before the outing, Dad comes. And after we go to bed, I hear him yell up the stairs, "Do you like bacon?" And I'm like, I know where this is going. "Eggs," I call down, "scrambled." The next morning, as he hands me the eggs, he goes, "Do you like pancakes?" And I go, "Dad, I'm not big into pancakes." "I can make you small pancakes." I am not gonna have this conversation. So I redirect. "You know, Dad, I just went out and tried corned beef hash the other day." He's pleased. After breakfast, we head over to the marina. Our time out on the river is glorious. Marin does the perfect job as the parent whisperer. I say, "Dad, check out the egrets fishing on the shore," and then wait for the joke I know is coming. "Egrets? I've had a few." As we get back to the marina, the sun is setting and the wind's picked up. I drop Dad and Marin off at the shore. Dad backs the car and the trailer down the steep ramp until the trailer's submerged in the water. It's my job to drive the boat onto the submerged trailer. The first time, I go in too slow, and the wind takes me, and I miss the trailer. Go in the second time, same thing. The third time, I go in faster. Slow down! I cut the engine. Our eyes lock as I float past him one more time. This is not the first time we've had vehicular issues. I flash back to age 16. Dad's taking me on a driving lesson. We're in a VW Bug with a stick shift on a steep hill that flows out to a busy road. I need to let go of the clutch and put on the gas in such a way that I don't stall us and I don't hurl us into traffic. Gas, clutch, gas, clutch. Hillary, what you're doing is like masturbating. It's never gonna get you anywhere. I didn't know at the time that my one sex talk would be coupled with my one driving lesson. I look over at the shore. Oh my God, my 81-year-old dad has taken off his pants. He's wading into the water, arms raised like Moses, in his button-down shirt and tighty-whities. Bring it in! I'll catch it! I am laughing so hard I can barely breathe. Marn is frozen on the shore. There's a guy 20 yards from us who looks over, takes in the scene, runs over, and joins my dad in the water. I collect myself and drive the boat in. Success. Relief. Later, Marin tells me she hadn't been frozen on the shore in shock. She'd been crying. He loves you so much, she said. I know, I said. The next time I'm at my parents' house, my mom hands me a small red can. Your father got you this at the grocery store. It's corned beef hash. A meat Valentine. Do you like it? She asks. No, I say. And yes.
That was Hillary Price sharing her story, A Meat Valentine, with the audience at Gateway City Arts in Holyoke. When she's not telling stories, she's writing and drawing the nationally syndicated comic strip Rhymes with Orange from her home in Western Massachusetts. If you love storytelling and want to keep up on what's happening around the region, from open mics to workshops and everything in between, join our Facebook group, Valley Storytelling Community. We post our podcast episodes there too, along with audition deadlines for Valley Voices, video from recent slams, and more. And now for our last story, which comes to us from David Bully, who grew up in the tiny town of Stacyville, Maine, where he and his family were always up for adventure, legal and otherwise.
One day, my father came out of the bathroom holding a National Geographic, and I was very relieved to see that it wasn't the same National Geographic I had been looking at in the bathroom. He told me that he was going to terrace our backyard hill in northern Maine in the manner of the rice paddies around the mountaintop in Thailand. That summer, I shoveled dirt. Every day, all summer long, I shoveled dirt until finally it was time to put in the first retaining wall. What's an ideal material for a retaining wall? Railroad ties, because they're free. So my uncle and my father and my brother and I went to Stacyville, Maine, about 30 miles away, along back roads, and we went to the railroad yard where we were gonna pick up used railroad ties. And as we pulled in on Sunday morning, we discovered that the used railroad ties were right beside the brand new railroad ties, which would probably last a few years longer. So we started loading them onto the truck. My father and my uncle and my other uncles were legendary for their physical strength. My father could take an entire railroad tie and throw it on his shoulder and march up the hill and throw it onto the truck. My brother and I spent the entire time flipping one small one end over end until we got it close to the truck, where my uncle just grabbed it and threw it on along with the one on his shoulder. We didn't want to go back, so we loaded the truck as much as we thought it could possibly take. And then, as was the custom back in the day, my father and my uncle sat in the cab of the truck with the beer they so richly earned, and my brother and I climbed onto the railroad ties in the back of the truck, and we started driving away. It didn't take us long to discover that he couldn't steer. The front tires weren't touching the ground. Thinking fast, my uncle jumped out, leaned out the open window, and he said, "Dave, Doug, climb onto the front." So we climbed up over the cab and onto the hood of the truck and out near the front bumper, and we put our feet on the bumper and we sat on the hood of the truck, and he could barely steer. So we went off down the road. Now this was a Sunday morning in Staceyville, Maine, so the chances of seeing a cop were about nil. The only authority was the county sheriff, who we passed on the road. He stopped and we kept going. And he just seemed to sit there for the longest time. We just kept driving right along, and he just said, we were looking over our shoulder at him. He wasn't moving. And then he turned around, and he followed us. And then he just followed us for the longest time, as if he were perplexed. Like, what could possibly be happening right now? The two kids are on the front of a truck. Finally, he turned on the lights. And when he turned on the lights, my uncle put his head out the window and he said, "Hang on, boys." And he kept on going. He didn't go any faster, he just kept going. Eventually, and there's no other traffic at all. There's not actual addresses in Staceyville, Maine. It's just, you know, you name the person they are sending a letter to. And the cop pulled up alongside of us and he rolled down his window and he yelled out, "What are you guys doing?" My uncle yelled, "We're trying to get away." The sheriff laughed and my uncle laughed and my father laughed and my brother and I on the hood of the truck, we high-fived and we were laughing. So what he really wanted to do was to get to the dirt road. So we got to the dirt road where he stopped. And then the sheriff walked over and he said, "What's going on?" And my uncle explained that we would be on a dirt road for the rest of the trip, not really a danger to anybody. And we just needed to make it back home so we could build the wall. And the sheriff had seen these rice paddies before and he thought it was a great idea. And he said, "What about the boys on the front of the truck?" And my Uncle Neil said, "You know, monkeys grab onto their mom's fur and they swing through the trees? Those kids are fine." The sheriff thought that was okay. So that's how we drove home. And I'm reminded of this story over and over again because my uncle passed last year. And he had this way that I learned about turning the tiniest of the most mundane of things into these wonderful adventures. He had to use oxygen for the last couple of years of his life, and he insisted that the hose be 50 feet long so he could go swimming. And he taught me that. And I have a lot of stories, and the reason I do is because when people ask me to go from the back of the truck to the front, I say yes. Thank you.
That was David Bulley sharing his story, trying to get away. Sometimes Dave, who, as you heard, grew up in northern Maine, says he still feels a little like the barbarian from the north when dealing with the genteel folk of Western Mass. You'll be able to see David, decidedly not a barbarian in my humble opinion, on stage at the Best of Valley Voices this fall at the Academy of Music Theater in downtown Northampton. You can learn more about the Best of, the big storytelling showdown that concludes our story slam season, at nepr.net/valleyvoices. We'll announce ticket sales for that show and the last slam of our season on the Valley Storytelling Community Facebook group, so don't forget to join us there too. Our next episode will feature stories from Valerie Reese, Eddie Brennan, and Lauren Osberg on the theme In the Mood.
And my husband and I went to a wonderful sex therapist named Jassy, a British woman who says things like, everybody is sitting on their genitals all of the time, but we all pretend that they don't exist.
You're going to want to hear the rest of that, so be sure to subscribe to the Valley Voices podcast on Apple Podcasts, where you can leave us a review. It helps others find the show, or wherever you listen to your podcast. Valley Voices Story Slam is produced by New England Public Radio and the Academy of Music Theater, with special thanks to our Season 5 venues, Gateway City Arts and New City Brewery. Big thanks also to Holyoke Media and East Hampton Media, who film each slam for us, too. Check out those videos on our website, nepr.net/valleyvoices. We'll be back in 2 weeks with the next episode of the Valley Voices podcast. Until then, keep your ears open for a good story and check out some of New England Public Radio's other podcasts, like In Contrast, which explores art and politics through interviews with people like American poet Wendy Barker, children's book author Mo Willems, and artist Sonia Clark. Look for In Contrast on the NEPR Podcast Hub or wherever you find your podcasts. Thanks for joining me for this episode of the Valley Voices podcast. See you in a few weeks.